I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
President Biden is now vowing to respond after a drone attack killed three U.S. soldiers in Jordan. The big question this morning, what will that response look like?
We had a tough day last night in the Middle East. We lost three brave soldiers in an attack on one of our bases.
Yeah.
And I've asked for the silence of all three of those fallen soldiers.
Jeez.
The president saying we shall respond. Iran this morning denying any involvement in the deadly attack on that military outpost. But U.S. officials are blaming Iran-backed militants and say the drone appeared to have been launched from Syria. President Biden is facing pressure from some Republicans to strike back. Senator Lindsey Graham telling him to, quote, hit Iran now, hit them hard. And Senator John Cornyn urging President Biden to, quote, target Tehran.
That is a CNN report on the attack that happened over the weekend, leaving three of our troops dead, dozens injured. I let us play that clip of Biden because it was so mumbling and kind of almost indifferent, maybe just awakened to the fact. I don't expect him to get up there and rail and shout death to Tehran. I don't expect that. But I do expect a firmer resolve in his voice. The thing he said that was of most value is let's take a moment of silence to honor those killed and injured. Good. Now what? Again, this is my take. You may have a different take, but I believe, and that's why I chose to go ahead and leave that rambling audio. You could say the mics weren't placed well, and could say that it wasn't clean enough audio because of all the other cameras, these still cameras, click, 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 but a firmer, stronger voice would have been much appreciated by me and I think most of the nation. If you're going to get up in front of our nation and you're going to address the deaths of three Americans, known dead, and some of these other casualties might be more severe, I would like to see you act like a commander-in-chief. Again, I'm not talking about yelling. I'm talking about pretty much the emphasis direction I'm putting on it. Is that just my take, or do you have the same? We got a lot to cover because a lot has happened over the weekend. I thank you as always for joining us. Let me set the stage for today, January 29, 2024. This is the first of 2 hours of Larry Connors USA back-to-back. And reminding you when we're on the air, video of the show is streaming at Newstalk STL Facebook, Twitter, Rumble, and YouTube. Also at Larry Connors USA Facebook, Rumble, Twitter. And reminding you, if you miss any part of any program, you can always go to LarryConnorsUSA.com or Larry Connors USA Facebook and find the program and either watch and or listen and or share. I see more of you are sharing. And your numbers, by the way, you're sharing and more joining. It's amazing to me. Every day, just on the feeds, just on one of the feeds, we're showing anywhere from 700 close to 1,000 every day. Because of you, and I thank you. And let me take a moment to tell you that following us, of course, today, we've got a great program coming up at 8 o'clock tonight. The Rob Carter Show will debut tonight after this hour, after our 2 hours. So you want to stick around for that as well. Wishing him well moving forward. I know he'll do great. All right, so back to the issue with the situation involving the attack upon our outpost. It's right on Syria border, Jordan. is at a triangle mixed, kind of watching traffic going back and forth. This marked the 168th attack on our U.S. troops since October 7. 168. Now, you remember we had a previous case where there were something like 20 soldiers injured in one attack in a facility we had. And then we were told it was 40. And then we were told some of them had massive head trauma. Now, I know what they mean by that. They never have clarified it. It could be that massive in the sense that they will never be able to do a lot of things in their life they would have done, much less serve the country. They're all in a dangerous place right now. This is a theater of war, and it's all around them. I want to switch to a question that was raised by MSNBC's Joe Scarborough to the National Security Advisor spokesman to the White House, John Kirby.
At what point do we actually go after the source of the attacks, Iran, and strike them where they are?
Well, I think I certainly understand Americans' concern over these repeated attacks by groups that are backed by Iran, Joe. I'm not going to get ahead of the president or his decision space. I mean, you heard him say yesterday, we're going to respond. We'll do that. Obviously, we have now three American families that got the worst possible news over the weekend, and now 30 more others that are injured, some of them seriously. We're going to take this seriously as well. We've got to do what we have to do to protect our troops and our facilities. What the options are available to the president, we're still working through that. He's still working his way through that, and I don't want to close down any decision space on his behalf. That said, we certainly know Iran's backing these groups. We know that they are resourcing, they're supplying, in some cases they're providing information that allows these groups to do this. We're taking that very seriously. We don't want a wider war with Iran. We don't want a wider war in the region, but we got to do what we have to do.
We got to do what we got to do, meaning what? What? Now, again, I'm not for telegraphing what we're going to do and who we're going to hit and at what time. But I, again, would like a little bit more firm commitment, just saying we're going to do what we got to do. Well, did I not recall President Biden right after October 7 happened, Hamas attacking Israel? And he said, for any nations out there thinking of taking advantage of this, I have a word for you. Don't. Don't. Look what they've done since then. 168 attacks on U.S. targets. And we responded lightly, hitting some munitions depots, empty barracks, so forth. We ramped up a little bit to deal with the Houthis in Yemen, only to protect the Red Sea, cargo, merchants, and our own Navy in that area. And the other thing that hangs in the balance, if you don't want to hit Tehran and you do not want to possibly inflame everything more, start by putting sanctions back in place. Stop oil shipments going out of Iran to China, 1 million barrels a day, and the money they're getting from China goes right into all their proxy agents and their terrorist fights. Could we start there? We did have that in place under Trump. Biden canceled it. And they still have on the table talks about maybe working out a new nuclear deal for Iran. You don't even begin that discussion. And the second or third point I should add, Iran is never going to be your friend regardless of what you give them. And there are other things we can be doing, but we're not. We're going to have more on this deadly attack on our American troops and the U.S. reaction in this hour, still to come in this hour, including Fred Flight's 25-plus years in Intel, CIA, Department of Defense, and others. But first, the push to impeach DHS Secretary Mayorkas. Is it legitimate, or is it, as the Democrats want to call it, just a campaign stunt?
And we are back with breaking news from Capitol Hill. House Republicans have just unveiled two articles of impeachment they're bringing against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. The first is focused on what they call a willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law. The second is focused on what they're alleging is a breach of public trust. The reason? Republicans disagree with how the secretary is handling the humanitarian crisis at the southern border. In response, the Department of Homeland Security released this statement. Quote, this farce of an impeachment is a distraction from other vital national security priorities and the work Congress should be doing to actually fix our broken immigration laws. Republicans don't want to fix the problem. They want to campaign on it.
And see, there they go again. I want to fix the problem, and it's simply shut the border. I do want to impeach Mayorkas, but there's a voice coming forward, a voice we often rely on. Constitutional law knowledge. I'm going to accept his knowledge on this. I don't like his decision and his statement. You won't either. But I do believe in the Constitution and the way he views this. Well, I'll let you hear it directly from him, Jonathan Turley, George Washington Law Professor.
The fact is, impeachment is not for being a bad cabinet member or even being a bad person. It is a very narrow standard. And even though we took language from the British, we adopted a much more narrow approach to impeachment. The framers rejected terms like maladministration to make sure that we confined this. And it's important to remember that we've only impeached one cabinet member in history, and that was viewed as a fairly abusive use of impeachment. It was an impeachment after that person left office. But, you know, past Congresses have recognized that there's a danger to this. Once you cross the Rubicon and start to remove cabinet members because they're not doing a good job, and right. Mayorkas is clearly not doing a good job, but it's the job that President Biden apparently likes. He's complimented Mayorkas. He's carrying out Joe Biden's policy.
And so he's doing his job. So no high crimes and misdemeanors, according to Jonathan Turley. And that makes me sick. But at the same time, if it's the way the Constitution he sees it should be read, then I'm going to stick with him. Sometimes you got to swallow the hard stuff. So maybe we are spending more time on impeaching Mayorkas than we should. But we got to shut the border down. And in fact, put it this way. We know with all of the activities going on in the Middle East, we know that open border is a big invitation to terrorists across the world.
The men and women who earn their spot on the FBI's terror list do so by associating with groups that hate America. They hate our values. They hate our country. They hate our people. Many of them want to kill us and drink our blood out of a boot. And yet they're coming across the southern border. These terrorist sympathizers, in some cases terrorists, they may be evil, but they're not stupid. They know they can blend into the masses at the border and come in unnoticed. For example, CNN reported a few months ago that someone who had worked as an independent contractor for ISIS helped smuggle more than a dozen people from Uzbekistan to our border. Overwhelmed officials at our border processed each migrant's asylum claim without triggering a single red flag. Not a single red flag. And then they released the whole group, every one of them, into the U.S.
Now, I have to ask you, that was Senator John Kennedy, Louisiana. There's no doubt some of the terrorists are coming from the Middle East. If they're terrorists in that region, why do you think they're coming here? Well, of course, Biden's open door policy. And I would rather fight those terrorists over there than on our soil. But what is the commander-in-chief willing to do?
President Biden yesterday called this attack on those U.S. forces despicable and wholly unjust. And now he and his team are working towards deciding how exactly the U.S. will respond. In a statement mourning the death of those three U.S. service members, the president said, quote, "We will hold all those responsible to account at a time and in a manner of our choosing." Now, the president so far has said that it was Iran-backed militant groups based in Syria and Iraq that were responsible for this attack. But the U.S. is still working to determine which specific group carried out this attack on U.S. forces. Overnight, Iran denied any involvement or responsibility for this attack, according to Iran's state news agency. And it really speaks to one of the challenges facing President Biden going forward, as he and his team have really tried to sought to prevent this conflict from widening into an even broader conflict in the Middle East.
I am totally surprised Iran denies any involvement. And they support each and every one of those terrorist groups we're talking about. It really makes no matter what their name. They're getting support from Iran. If you go after Iran and you begin to shut down, at least start placing embargo again, sanctions around them, then that would shut off some of the money. It'll take a while for it to dry up, but it would. But again, we know they're terrorists over there, and they're going after our troops and every target they can over there. Now they're coming through our border here, and they're looking for good opportunities here, and this makes us more vulnerable every day. And as you were hearing in that CNN report, well, the president's still trying to decide what to do. Well, I understand that. And again, I'm not about letting the enemy know what we're going to do. But I am a very much in favor of finding ways that you get their attention and you get it in a hard way. Now, to that extent, Major General Patrick Ryder says, we're going to do again, the talking point for the administration is, what we need to.
We will take necessary action to protect our U.S. forces, no matter where they're serving around the world. I'm not going to telegraph or forecast any potential response from the United States because of this attack, other than to say there will be a response, and this kind of action will not be tolerated. You know, U.S. forces are in this region for one reason only, and that is to focus on the lasting defeat of ISIS. And so, again, we will do whatever we need to do to protect our forces going forward. But certainly, at the end of the day, we are not looking to engage in a wider conflict.
Well, before this happened over this weekend, were we not doing what we were supposed to be doing to protect our forces? John Bolton, who served as a U.N. ambassador for the U.S. and also as a Trump national security advisor briefly, says we have been getting by simply by the roll of the dice.
Our military officers have been saying for some time, the only reason we haven't had a mass casualty event like this in the past few months is luck. And obviously, luck ran out. If you want to establish deterrence, you don't just hit the proxies that are carrying out the attack. You carry out retaliation against the command and control authorities in Iran and some of their facilities. And just stay one more point here. You don't do this in a tit-for-tat response. You don't say, well, they did this and we're going to do that. To reestablish deterrence, or maybe establish it in the first place, we have to impose enough pain on Iran that it outweighs what they've done to us and is sufficient for them to say, we're never going to try it again. So let's see what Biden does here.
In other words, not proportional. Hit them. Hit them hard. Bolton's evaluation, who would handle this situation better, Trump or Biden, might surprise you. That's coming up before we wrap up this hour. And next up, Fred Flights, an expert in Iran and terrorism. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Pigeons, they are everywhere, and they're very good at dive bombing freshly washed cars. Wellington Environmental reminds you, those droppings are more than a nuisance. They can be a major health issue, especially massive droppings on buildings or in parking garages. So who do you call to safely clean it up? You do what many hospitals, universities, public buildings already do. You call Wellington Environmental. Wellington Environmental has been dealing with all kinds of hazards for 35 years. Special people, special skills, special equipment. Wellington gets it done. So to avoid health issues ranging from pigeon droppings to mold to chemical leaks, contact Wellington, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental. Your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps in the afternoon.
Horace, Americans individually have lost over $4,000 in income and over $7,000 where you have a household with both parents working.
It shouldn't be, it's the economy, stupid. We should just say, stupid! It's the economy. Unbelievable the devastation that Americans are feeling.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps, weekdays at 3:30 on News Talk STL.
What if everything you thought and believed to be true about owning and buying your home turned out to be wrong?
Straightforward, objective advice on the right way to make the most out of every dollar you put into your home.
We're the only country that has one of those. Most other countries, considering like Canada, the UK, they don't have long-term fixed-rate mortgages like that. They're all variable-rate mortgages.
HomeWise with Michael Midget, Sunday mornings at 9 on News Talk STL.
Great news for my sponsor, Napoli C. And it's no surprise to me, nor hundreds who have dined there. The first time I entered, it was clear Napoli C is unique. The decor, the fish, imaginative cocktails. And, of course, Napoli C is right next door to Napoli 3 in St. Charles. Napoli 2 is in Town and Country. The original Cafe Napoli is in Clayton. And I'm honored to endorse each of them. Visit any of the Cafe Napolis.
This is News Talk STL.
I've been holding it so long. I've been sleeping all alone. Lord, I miss you. I've been hanging on the phone. I've been sleeping all alone. I won't kiss you.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. My next guest we've had on numerous times before, and he's one of the first sources I go for when it comes down to what happened over the weekend. That is, of course, three American soldiers being killed by another terrorist attack upon this now 100, almost 170 upon our troops since October 7th. Fred Fleiss is the vice chair of the American First Policy Institute Center for American Security. 25 years with the CIA, Defense Intel, Department of State, and the staff of the U.S. House Committee on Intel. Fred, welcome back, sir.
Good to be here, Larry.
So, now what?
Well, I guess we should first recognize how lucky we are that there were 160 attacks against U.S. troops in Syria and Iraq, and there weren't any fatalities until yesterday. I think that's probably a minor miracle. How can there be so many attacks? Well, there's simply no deterrence. There's no fear of the United States under President Biden. We've now attacked the Houthis 8 times since the beginning of January. Why did we have to attack them more than once? And it just seems that neither Iran or Iran's proxies are deterred in any way. And I think there's going to have to be a fairly robust attack against Iran's proxies in Iraq and Syria. The same thing against the Houthis and enforcement of these sanctions against Iran. I know there's people talking about attacking Iran. I don't want to do that without Congress on board and a debate in Congress so Biden can explain what would the purpose of those attacks be. But I think we are in a very dangerous situation.
You've been very solid on that position. And a former colleague of yours and friend and had also served the Trump administration, John Bolton, said, we need to quit worrying about proportional response. We need to do something that will hit them hard and let them know we will not do that again if that's going to be our punishment. You agree with that?
I think he's right, but I think that attacking Iran is crossing a red line. I believe that Congress has prerogatives on declaring war, and even though we may not need a declaration of war, I don't want our president to be attacking Iran without Congress on board. First of all, I don't trust this president to do that. But even if Biden wasn't president, I think an action of this importance, this great type of step, means that we go in together. And I, that's what I would want to do. I might add, Biden's never going to attack Iran. He doesn't have the spine to do it. But if that's what Bolton wants, that's what I recommend.
Yeah, with congressional approval, you would recommend?
With, well, congressional approval, some type of buy-off, not just sending a letter saying I'm going to do this.
Right.
We need a debate where Biden sends representatives before Congress and explains to Congress what he's planning on doing and why. What's the strategy?
Now, before we leave that point and talk about other strategies that could be employed, I'd like your reaction, and obviously it borders on the political, but it also borders on the military and the intel that you've been in the zone for decades. Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, stated, Joe Biden emboldened Iran for years by tolerating attacks on our troops, bribing the Ayatollahs with billions of dollars, appeasing them up to no end. He left our troops as sitting ducks. Now three are dead, dozens wounded, sadly, as I predicted would happen for months.
I'm afraid he's exactly right. Biden has looked the other way and has done very little to increasing provocations by Iran and its proxies. Meanwhile, we've given them enormous sanctions waivers. We try to pay them a $6 billion ransom to free American soldiers, American prisoners last summer, a $100 billion waiver of sanctions in November. Think of this, right after the Hamas terrorist attacks, we're giving Iran a $100 billion sanctions waiver. You know, Congress, they say they're outraged, but Democrats aren't going to hold them accountable. This should be a bipartisan concern. And I think it's time for Democrats to say, you know, we may disagree with our members across the aisle, but this is getting out of control, and we need to rein in American foreign policy that is just getting more and more incoherent.
More and more have been saying, and had been saying, the moment we get American blood spilled, we will ratchet it up. That's talk. That's talk.
That's right. That's talk. But why did it have to come to this? 159 attacks, and now he's going to take some substantial response. And you know what's going to happen, Larry? He'll decide to bomb something, and he'll do victory laps, saying, "Well, I really showed them." And we'll find out a couple of weeks later that it was nothing, that it was empty buildings, or we didn't hit anything substantial. I mean, that's what we've seen from this administration. The first attack he conducted against the Houthis, we talked about this in early January. We were told this is going to make a big difference. And then we learned from the Wall Street Journal that before we bombed them, we told the Houthis we were coming so they could evacuate their buildings. And since their drones and missiles are mobile, they took them with them.
Oh, really? I'm surprised.
And the journal said this in an editorial. I can send you a copy of it. The journal said, this is a sign of weakness. We've seen this weakness throughout the Middle East that we did it that way.
Well, now, the other thing you and I have gone through is, you know, the fact that they continue to have on the table trying to do some kind of Iran nuke deal. There is no way in hell we should ever let Iran get a nuclear weapon. And you told me the last time we talked, last week, they're so close at this point.
We made enormous concessions to Iran over the summer as part of what I talked to you about. It's a secret, unwritten deal. That way Congress can't oversee it. That allows Iran to enrich uranium to up to the 60% level, which is a hair below weapons-grade uranium. And it was an outrageous concession because, you know, Biden wanted to show progress in getting the Iranians to cooperate. And it's also based on this mistaken belief that if we're just nice enough to the Iranians, they'll be our partner for peace in the Middle East. Obama believed that, Biden believes that, and I think you and I know it's complete nonsense.
You do not make friends with terrorists that want to kill you. And I'm looking at a statement here, the Islamic resistance in Iraq declaring that any negotiation between Baghdad and Washington on the presence of U.S. troops will prompt more pressure on the occupiers. And that's, you know, these positions we have over there are vital for the entire stability of the region. But again, you had John Kirby stating earlier yesterday and again today, and Major Ryder Smith, also saying we're enhancing protection and we'll make sure our troops are protected. They are not being protected, or we would not have this at this point.
No, they're not being protected, and if Biden's not going to protect them, we should pull them out. If our troops are going to be sitting ducks in Iraq and Syria, and there's already questions about why our troops are over there in the first place, if we're not going to protect them, if there's over 159 attacks on American troops, and there's no sign of those attacks stopping, and American troops are dying, it's time to bring them home.
We got 3,000 stationed, according to the Pentagon, in, I think that's just in Jordan. Is that correct? Is that your understanding? Or is that the Jordan, Syria?
I don't know whether that number's right or not. It probably is. Jordan is a close ally.
Right.
I have no reason to disagree with keeping a presence there. We want to keep Jordan stable and stand with a nation that stands with us.
Now, the other options would be when Biden came in, he lifted the sanctions. And Iran has been selling oil to China at 1 million barrels a day. And there's all the money they need in addition to what we gave them to fund proxy wars and anything else they want.
According to a Heritage Foundation study, as of September, Iran had accrued an additional $83 billion in revenue during the Biden administration than it would have had under Trump, because Biden is not enforcing oil sanctions against Iran. That was through September. He's still not enforcing them. So we talk about sanctions here and there, cut off the $6 billion, cut off that amount of money. Iran is getting this money because the sanctions aren't being enforced. And that money's going to Hamas. It's going to Hezbollah. It's going to the militias in Iraq and Syria.
Correct me on one thing if I'm wrong. We've got Shia and Sunni, and they're all being funded by Iran, aren't they? I mean, aren't they both getting money from the same source and going at each other in addition to U.S. targets?
The funding is really going to Shia groups. Iran has a relationship supporting some Sunni terrorists. It has allowed some Sunni terrorists to seek refuge in Tehran, for example. Some ISIS members, some Al-Qaeda members sought refuge in Iran. Right. But in general, ISIS is at war with Iran. And ISIS was behind that attack at the Soleimani Memorial in early January. Iran attacked an ISIS headquarters in Syria earlier this month and attacked another group that I think was linked to Sunni extremists in Pakistan. So Iran has its own terrorist problem. And I think it would be fair to say that Iran is not just at war with us. Iran is also at war with Sunni Islam.
Well, one final point then, again, based on your intel and everything, here we have Qatar serving as a hub for all the Hamas leaders to gather and wine and dine while their terrorists are inside the tunnels still trying to kill and Israelis and causing mass casualties among civilians in Gaza. How the hell does that happen?
Well, I think there's a lot of blame to go around here. As outrageous as it is that Qatar has been allowing Hamas leaders to seek refuge there and live as billionaires in extremely expensive hotels, Israel has tolerated this and has used Qatar as an intermediary to negotiate with Hamas, thinking that they could keep Hamas under control. Now Israel's upset about that. A lot of Americans are upset about it. The U.S. has gone along with that also. I think it was a mistake, but I don't see an easy answer to that.
Fred Flights, as always, most impressive credentials and your analysis right on point. Thank you for your time again, sir.
Good to be here. Thanks, Ari.
You bet. Fred Flights, Vice Chair of the America First Policy Institute. We're talking about John Bolton. Coming up, you're going to hear what John Bolton thinks about Bush and Biden in the Middle East.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at LarryConnorsUSA.
I got an email which brought a smile. A woman named Mary wrote me, "We are purchasing a new roof from John Beale, based on your recommendation. I thanked her then. I do it again now. Mary, I only endorse clients I believe in. And I've been a spokesman for John Beale for 10 years. It's all about trust. So if, like Mary, you need John Beale, trust me. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
I like supporting local companies that give back to the community. For more than 40 years, Vincent's Jewelers has helped raise more than $1.5 million for local charities. So I'm personally asking that when you're shopping for jewelry, give Vincent's a chance. And in turn, Vincent's will give even more to our community. On Olive, just east of 270. New specials every day on vincentsjewelers.com or Vincent's Facebook.
News, analysis, opinion.
USA, USA! That's a big game, man!
She's really losing control.
Then China didn't ask me about people mowing each other down in a mall.
This is News Talk STL.
It is their responsibility.
He is a metastasizing agent.
We're all keeping a close eye on this.
Legal immigration is crazy right now.
The United States is not being overrun.
News Talk STL.
It is a crisis at the border without question.
At NewsTalkSTL.com.
Planning a move? I encourage you to call McGuire Moving. And they not only do moving, they can provide you portable storage. They'll bring a storage container to you. You fill it at your time and convenience. They'll pick it up, move it where you want it. Here's their phone number, 314-241-0600. 241-0600. Website, McGuireMoving.com. McGuireMoving.com. Locally owned.
This is News Talk STL.
Well, I got me a gal in Pekin. She's a good old gal, okay. Oh, she's sitting there waiting by a window fan on a long, hot summer day. For every day I'm working on the Illinois River, get a half a day off with pay. Oh, Lobo picking up barges on a long, hot summer day.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Well, over the weekend, of course, we had a lot of teams playing and in the final run for the Super Bowl. A lot of money being exchanged, especially if you're betting. And are you one of those players who are getting extra bonuses? But I don't think anybody made more money over the weekend based upon the original decision, which is going to be appealed, than E. Jean Carroll. E. Jean Carroll, her second defamation lawsuit closed Friday. New York jury determining that former President Donald Trump owes her $83.3 million for defaming her in 2019. Now, I'm looking at a piece written by Breitbart. I've seen others similar to it, but I'm going to cite Breitbart on this so you can double-check it. They point out there's serious concerns with her entire story, and there have been that from the beginning. But I'll share something else with you. After this ruling came out to give that Trump was going to owe her $83 million, defamation is very hard to prove, by the way, extremely hard to prove. And even then, the way this case went down, I'm not sure it did. I think it got down to the attitude of the jury, the judge, and they just don't like Trump, seriously. That doesn't mean that there are not some valid issues in her side or complaint, but $83 million, that, you're talking about just piling on type thing? But John LeBoutier, former New York congressman, the author of Hobbit Hates America, Reaganite, never a Trumper, who I had on just last week, as a matter of fact. That was just before, in fact, I had him on Friday before the verdict had come down on this case. He sent me a clipping that shows Trump Towers in New York, shows Trump Towers under new management. And instead of Trump Towers, it reads E. Jean Carroll Towers. Well, it is funny. And yet at the same time, it's just more persecution of Donald Trump. I mean, anything they can to make him look unviable. So here's a way, Breitbart, and again, I'm going to give you the source. It's not my material, but I also want you to know where it originated. They point out that her story, she originally came out with her story in 2019. Now, here's the key issue here. At least it is for me. She claims that Trump sexually assaulted her in a dressing room in the mid-90s. In 2019, she comes out with a story for the first time. Look, women who undergo rape, the traumas they experience and maybe the fear to come out and will they be believed, and especially if it's a powerful man like Trump or anything else like that, they may have a lot of reasons which are justifiable, not only in their mind, but justifiable overall as to why they didn't make a complaint then. But according to her, Trump followed her into the fitting area, shoved her against the wall, pulled down her tights. If this is going to get a little hard for you, I'm sorry. I'm trying to read directly from some of the material presented to court. Forcing his fingers around my private area, thrusting his penis halfway, or I'm not certain, inside me. Trump has denied it all these years. And he said in 2019, when the allegations first came up, he said it's just as bad for people to believe it, particularly when there is zero evidence. Worse still, for a dying publication to try to prop itself up by peddling fake news. It's an epidemic. That might have been the first time he used the phrase fake news. That was in 2019 when he was being charged with that. He also said, if anyone has information that the Democratic Party is working with Ms. Carroll or New York Magazine, please notify me as soon as possible. The world should know what's really going on. It's a disgrace. People should pay dearly for such false accusations. Now, again, on the Breitbart, the way they're writing it, despite the odd things about Carroll's story and a stunning, as they call it, a stunning lack of evidence, she was awarded tens of millions of dollars. Trump supporters say that just shows how scary the justice system can be if it targets one individual. That I would agree with. I mean, we're talking about a penetration and or rape in 2019. And let me get the dates here again. I don't want to misstate the dates. Made her claim in 2019 that it was in the mid-90s that she supposedly was assaulted by Trump at this New York department store. And here are the facts they say the establishment media does not want to know. The location of the department store, Bergdorf Goodman, has no surveillance video of the alleged incident. There were apparently surveillance cameras, if I understand correctly, throughout the store. They would have spotted him and following her or whatever else. Then number two, there are zero witnesses to the alleged attack. This is her word against his word. That's not uncommon for a rape case. That doesn't mean she's lying or it's wrong. That's just not uncommon. She came forward as a right here in Breitbart conveniently with the allegations while promoting her book, What Do We Need Men For? In 2019, which featured a list of the most hideous men of my life, which included Trump, obviously. She was unable to remember when this alleged attack occurred, told her lawyer in 2023, this question, the when, the date, has been something I've been constantly trying to pin down. And again, this had been years. She began with 1994, then moved it to maybe 95, maybe 96. Couldn't remember the season. The dress she claims to have worn during the incident was not even available at the time of the claim she made. She said, this is a dress I wore in 1994. They went back and checked. The dress wasn't even made in 94. Okay, so maybe she's confused about the dates, if you want to give her that allowance. And the Trump attorney said, this is the 80s. Is it the 90s? Is it the 2000s? Trump has consistently stated he was falsely accused. He has a right to defend himself. And she never came forward with these allegations over the years, despite constantly being open about sexuality, posting things that were very sexual in nature on social media, many of which Trump has shared, including remarks such as, "How do you know your unwanted sexual advance is unwanted until you advance it?" And "Sex tip I learned from my dog: when in heat, chase the male until he collapses with exhaustion and then jump him." She is also on one piece of video saying, "Rape can be sexy." This is not a very good witness overall. Then one attorney for Trump said there was a May 2023, her story is pointed out in 2023, was very similar to a 2012 episode of Law and Order, Special Victims Unit. In that episode, titled Theater and Tricks, an individual talks about a rape fantasy in the same department store where she claims the incident took place. She admitted she was aware of the episode but denied watching it. According to the New York Post, the similarities between what she claimed to have happened and the show's plot were amazing. I don't know if Trump raped her, penetrated her, or did anything of what she claims. But $83.3 million for something that happened 15, 20 years earlier? It's a New York City court. What do you expect is going to happen? And again, for women out there who truly have been victims of rape, this kind of story hurts you when you make a legitimate claim. Every woman who fakes and makes a claim of rape when there is no rape, she demolishes, undermines the true stories that are happening. But they're doing it for their gain or their purpose or their revenge, whatever it might be. And for the women who have been subject to that, they need help, and they also need proper compensation. And someone should be going to jail. But, of course, the criminal case was over here. They opened up a window just long enough for her to refile her claim so she could go after her civil damages, and they put $83 million price tag on it. They're going to appeal. She's going to lose it. She's not going to get all that, but she'll get something. Well, and I mentioned earlier, former U.N. ambassador and former national security advisor to Trump, John Bolton, who had been a friend of Fred Flight's in the past. In fact, Flight's and Bolton were on the Trump team at the same time in the beginning of the Trump administration. And then Fred felt that maybe Bolton was going a little too far in some of his thoughts, and they just kind of drifted apart. He didn't want to get into it in great detail. Friends suddenly aren't as close as they were. That happens a lot. But again, Bolton, who had served as former national security advisor to Trump, was asked, who is better to deal with the current threat in the Mideast? Would that be Biden or Trump? His answer might surprise, even anger some of you, when we continue.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want to give someone something which they will really enjoy? Give them a Cafe Napoli gift card. You pick the amount, and they pick which of the Cafe Napolis they want to visit. Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Cafe Napoli in Town and Country, Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles, or right next door, Napoli C. The Napoli gift card. It's the perfect gift for anyone. Or your entire office, Cafe Napoli. Cafe Napoli.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Neither one of them is. Neither is fit to be commander-in-chief at this point. Trump, as usual, is, as they say in Texas, all hat and no cattle. He has a large mouth and a large ego to go with it. Biden doesn't seem to get the point. I'm not sure Trump does either. The center of the problem in the Middle East today is Iran. They are the support for Hamas attack on Israel on October the 7th, for what the Houthis are doing in the Red Sea, for the Hezbollah missile attacks on northern Israel, and for these Iraqi Shia militia attacking American positions. If you want this to stop, you have to make the people truly responsible for it pay the price, and that's in Iran. As Al Haig, Secretary of State, used to say, go to the source.
Go to the source. Now, those are the words of John Bolton. He was basically fired by Trump as national security advisor. So you could say, well, he's just dissing on Trump because they don't have a good relationship anymore. He did fall back on a great Texas saying, all hat, no cattle. Big hat, big hat. But no cattle. You're not that much of a cattleman after all, are you? It's a guy sitting over in the corner with a crusty old rumpled up, what might appear to have been a Stetson at one time, got more dirt and cow dung on it than you'll find in the, on the yard. And he has a cattle, not this one. But his view, Bolton's view, being that Trump's ego is too much into it and he's just not really cognizant of what's really going on, and that Biden is the same way in different degrees. I know that's what not a lot of folks didn't want to hear. It was, of course, this last Sunday that the U.S. Central Command announced that 3 U.S. service members were killed, 25 injured, a one-way attack drone that hit a military base northeast Jordan near the Syrian border. And there have been 168 attacks against U.S. forces, U.S. positions, since October 7, actually October 17th. Quentin put down the numbers for me. I'd seen them earlier, and then I misplaced them. I appreciate him pulling them back together. 168 attacks against U.S., and how many attacks have we had in response? Eight. That is a 1 to 21 ratio. That doesn't prove you're going to do anything, does it? So for every 21 attacks, we responded once. And when we did, it was advance word to the Houthis, we're going to hit that. You better get your people out of there. Another place, maybe we were hitting an empty building anyway. We cannot continue like this. We cannot continue to show this ineptness, regardless of who's commander-in-chief. And we cannot have a commander-in-chief that gets up over the weekend and talks about this and kind of mumbles around about how sad and bad it is, which is clear, but not being a little bit more forceful, as I said at the beginning of the hour. If you missed the beginning of this hour, you need to go back and pull it up. And I encourage you then to share it with others. Because I want this country riled up entirely, because this is going to continue until we put a stop to it. You're not going to make friends with Iran. They're going to continue this. Republicans, of course, already blasting away at Biden. Senator Ted Cruz saying, day one decision not just to appease the Iranian regime, but indeed to enable the Ayatollah to attack Americans and American interests across the Middle East. And I would add to that, not just across the Middle East, but inside our nation. As I said earlier, they're coming across, they are utilizing that open border. It's a revolving door for them. I want to fight them over there, not here, but we're going to be fighting them here on our own soil. Secretary Austin's efforts to deter aggression, as pointed out by Senator Graham, failing miserably. He said, if they do not change their policies now, more American service members in the region will pay the price. And he wants to hit Iran directly and hit it hard. I hear what Fred Flights is saying. Let's kind of get on the same page. But all Americans should be. We got Americans in jeopardy, a clear and present danger. What are we going to do about it? Coming up, more also on the border deal, and some are saying, oh, there's a bipartisan deal. Whoa, not so fast. And remember our pledge, one nation under God.